relief factor, pain relief that's natural, pain relief that works, and pain relief that attacks the source of the pain. That's the experience of tens of thousands of Americans who are taking Relief Factor right now. See their incredible video endorsements at ReliefFactor.com and then order your three-week quick starter pack for just $19.95. That's less than a dollar a day. Find out if it can work for you like it works for me by ordering your three-week quick starter pack today. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Be the next success story.
Portions of the following program may contain pre-recorded material.
This is America First, and here's your host, Dr. Sebastian Gorka.
We have to remember that our defense is not just a commitment of money. It is a commitment of will. Because as the Polish experience reminds us, the defense of the West ultimately rests not only on means, but also on the will of its people to prevail and be successful and get what you have to have. The fundamental question of our time is whether the West has the will to survive. Do we have the confidence in our values to defend them at any cost? Do we have enough respect for our citizens to protect our borders? Do we have the desire and the courage to preserve our civilization in the face of those who would subvert and destroy it?
Perhaps one of the most important speeches of the modern presidential age. That was the 45th President of the United States speaking in Warsaw, next to the monument for the Warsaw Uprising, July 6, 2017. I am honored to have been involved in the framing of that speech when I worked in the White House. The question that the president asked is, do we have the will to stand up and protect the values of Western civilization against those who would subvert and destroy it? That will be the question for today's one-on-one with a very special guest. It's been far too long since he's been on the show. He's been traveling across the nation because his latest work, all of his works, are worth your time. But his latest work has just been released. It's already reached number two in the bestsellers, The Dying Citizen by Victor Davis Hanson. How progressive elites, tribalism, and globalization are destroying the idea of America. Professor, welcome back to One-on-One here on America First.
Thank you for having me, Sebastian.
So I'm working a little bit backwards. I wanted to frame our discussion with that question, which I think is the question of the age and has been the question since Western civilization arrived at its apotheosis, blending Greek-Roman concepts of the polis and of rule of law. But before we dive into that and discuss your book that everybody must order right now, will you introduce, for those who may have just happened onto this podcast, may have been sent this video link by a friend and who aren't familiar with your background, because you are recognized as one of the greatest strategic minds today in the United States. You are at Hoover, you are at Stanford, but you have a fascinating backstory, where you have taught in the past, what your family has done. Will you talk to us about a little about the Hanson family and why you dedicated your book, the Second World Wars, to who you dedicated them to?
Yeah, I'm speaking here from a house that I grew up in. It was my grandmother's house, my parents then. And it was built by my great-grandmother in 1870 on this small farm in the Central Valley of California. So I was very rare because my grandparents never went to college, but they had three daughters and they mortgaged their farm in the 40s and they sent them to Stanford University. And so I grew up in kind of a hybrid environment where my mother was a judge and my aunt was a professor, but they were all farmers as well. And so we had to work on the farm. And then when I got back from graduate school at 25, 26 with a PhD, I had to take my turn. And I loved it. I farmed full time here where I am now.
What kind of farm did your family establish?
Well, they had grapes for raisins and plums and peaches. And then at one time we had apricots and nectarines and truck farming, fresh tomatoes for farmers markets. And then during the fallout of the 80s and 90s, my siblings moved away. And so I'm the only one that has the 40 acres left of the original 180 acres. But it's been good for me to live in a, it's a very impoverished area because of illegal immigration, but I have a lot of great friends that are third generation Mexican-American families that live next to me. And so it's a very different experience than what I encounter at Stanford University, where I went to school and where I work now. And I'm much more, I guess, what's the word, comfortable where I am here than on the coast.
And talk to us about your academic career, because you weren't always teaching at Stanford. You've had a very eclectic grounding. So talk to us a little bit about that progression.
Well, very quickly, I was trained as a classical philologist. That's a fancy word for Greek and Latin scholarship, language, literature, history. And I specialized in, it was hard to do, but I specialized in military history, which meant that I had to take the regular Greek and Latin philology manuscript classes, and then I did ancient military history on the side, and then out of that I grew an interest in military history in general. But when I came back, my grandfather had died, so my parents were working, so I ran this farm for 5 years but did nothing else. And then finally at the age of 29, I went back to academia. I'd never been to the Fresno State campus, maybe one time, but it was 30 miles away. I walked in the door with sort of dirty clothes, and I said, could I teach Latin? And they kind of laughed me out. But eventually they gave me one Latin class, and then 5 years later we had a department or a program of five professors, and we tried to train mostly poor people. That was the student body profile, Southeast Asians, Mexican-Americans, Oklahoma diaspora, in classical languages, French and German, literature, to make them competitive with the so-called better schools. And we did that, and we sent about 50, not that that's the only barometer for success, but we sent about 50 students to the Ivy League in law and academia and medicine. So it was a very, and it continues today. And then at 50, I kind of got burned out of teaching 8 courses a semester, and sometimes, I mean, a year, 5 a semester, finally, 10. And so I retired and went to the Hoover Institution, and I commute up there once a week.
And you have a whole library of books you have published. One of my favorites is Who Killed Homer? Also, The Case for Trump, but ancient works on the strategy of ancient Greece. The new book is The Dying Citizen. Let me start with a very, maybe a simpleton's question. Professor Hansen, can a nation long survive if its elite hates what the nation stands for? Is that a too obvious a question for 2021?
No, you know it can't, and we all know it can't. It's even more troubling. It cannot exist unless what the Greeks called the mesoi, or the middle people, do not exist in numbers. And by that I mean, you have to have a check on the power and the inside leverage of the wealthy, and you cannot be dependent on the government as the poor. But the middle class, that's what Tocqueville said, that's what the Federalist Papers said, that's what going back to Aristotle, you have to have an independent, economically viable middle class. And that can be an independent truck driver, a small business person, a teacher. But they have to have property, they have to be engaged politically, and they have to be immune from the enticements and the threats of government and the wealthy.
And if you, is it hyperbole? Is it exaggeration for me to describe the elite thusly? Or have we ever been in a state where on both sides of the aisle we have such a number who say America is the problem, Professor?
I don't think, I think that's a good point. I grew up in the 70s, came of age, and what I remember about the tail end of the 60s revolution is we heard that rhetoric, especially the any means necessary, or the ends that are so noble justify any means required or available. But the difference, Seb, was when you saw marches, they marched on the Pentagon. They marched into the president's office. They marched to the local DA's office. But now, or they marched against the corporate boardroom, or they occupied Wall Street later. But what's happening now, they are in the Pentagon. They are the president. They are the prosecuting attorney. They are the judicial class. So this revolution, insidiously, incrementally, the last 30 years has absorbed our institutions. And although they lack the majority support, as we see for the polls, that Biden's, all of his issues, all of his socialist agenda does not poll 50%. but they don't care because they feel that Facebook and NPR and PBS and LeBron and Oprah and the Obamas and the Wall Street grandee and the CEO of American Airlines or Coca-Cola, they have such a 360 degree encirclement or 24/7 constant refrain that they don't need the popular support. And then when the popular support raises up, the dragon has been poked, suddenly they say, well, we're going to let in 2 million people in this physical year across the non-existent border, or we're going to get rid of the 180-year filibuster, or the 150-year nine-person Supreme Court, or the 60-year, 50-year state union of 650 states, or, you know, we can get rid of the 233-year electoral college, or the state's prerogatives in national elections to set validity. So they want to change the rules or change the demography because they don't have confidence that even these institutions that they've absorbed will give them permanent power, because they're afraid of the people. I think they're terrified of the next midterm that's looming in about a year, especially.
Yeah. We will discuss the last election as well as the future election. I'm delighted. I've been looking on my phone. It is now number one, the number one bestseller in civil rights and liberties. Get it right now, The Dying Citizen, and follow this man, Victor Davis Hanson. Anything he writes is worth your reading, but the newest book is especially so. Follow him at VD Hanson right now. Back with Professor Hanson momentarily. I'm Sebastian Gorka, coming to you from the ReliefFactor.com studios. Relief Factor, pain relief that works, pain relief that's real, pain relief that is liberating tens of thousands of Americans every single day from their pain. People like Yvonne from California. This is Yvonne's story. Both my husband and I are in our 70s and are so grateful to have found Relief Factor. We tried so many other solutions, but none of them have given us the freedom of being pain-free like Relief Factor. Did you hear those words? Pain-free. Freer. That could be you. That should be you. Find out today. There's only one way, but it's super easy. Order the 3-week quick starter pack for just $19.95 at relieffactor.com or call 800-500-8384. It'll be at your door in 3 days or less. Take it morning and evening just like I do. And I promise you, Dr. G's guarantee, by the end of those 3 weeks, you will know whether it works for you like it works for me, Yvonne, and thousands of your fellow Americans. You've waited long enough. You deserve to know. Come on, liberate yourself. 800-500-8384. That's 800-500-8384. ReliefFactor.com. ReliefFactor.com.
On the side of the U.S. Constitution, America First.
Welcome back to America First with Professor Victor Davis Hanson. Professor, the book is titled The Dying Citizen. Let's spend a few minutes on the importance of this concept, because in an age where civics seems to be dead, where you're far more likely as a teenager to be taught that America is the problem, not that citizenship is essential for the healthy functioning of any nation, especially a republic. Will you give us the cliff notes on citizenship and why it is the bedrock of Western civilization?
Yeah, I try to point out that we take it for granted, Seb, but in the 7,000 year history of civilization, it came very late, 2,500 years ago in Greece, and then later in Rome, and then through Europe with starts and halts and ends and a checkered history. And now we have it, because the natural condition of man apparently was to be a serf or a slave or a subject. But a citizen, that asks a lot of a person. They have to elect their own officials. They have to keep them accountable. They have to make their own budgets and expenditures. They choose when to fight and when not. And so it requires a lot of responsibilities in exchange for these unique rights. And it's fragile. There's 190 nations in the world today, and I think you could be charitable to say 90 of them are constitutional societies. Most are not. And they were not in history. And this country is the longest surviving constitutional republic of the republics or democracies that survive today. And in the book, I try to suggest that historically, if you look at these systems, you have to have a middle class, and we're losing it. We know that. Now with this erosion in wages again that had been arrested the last 4 years, it's imperiled more than ever. You have to have borders and a sovereign safe space to inculcate common traditions, language, and customs. You have to have a ideal that unites a multiracial society. Otherwise, you're pre-civilizational tribalist, where you just judge people on the basis of their superficial appearance. And yet, we're regressing back to a pre-civilizational state. And then in the second part of the book, very quickly, I say, unfortunately, it's not just these organic bottom-up pressures on citizenship, but it's this contrived top-down, where we have this administrative, unaccountable state of the James Comeys, the Jim Clappers, the General Milleys, the Anthony Faucis that exercise enormous power without the ability of the citizen to say, you didn't tell the truth under oath, Mr. Clapper, you lied, or Mr. Milley, you cannot do that, you cannot interrupt the chain of command, or Dr. Fauci, admit it, you channeled funding into the virology lab at Wuhan, we're holding you accountable, we're not able to do that. And then we have these evolutionaries, as I said, that believe that human nature changes, and therefore a malleable constitution has to be changed. I mentioned what they want to do with the Electoral College and the nine-portion Supreme Court, but Seb, they're talking about two senators are not fair because they don't understand the whole principle of a nation, a federalist system of 50 individual states, and they want to make senators proportionally representative. And they want more House members, 2,000, 3,000. So they want a radical democracy that can do anything they want on any given day based on what 51% of the people feel at that moment. And then finally, we've bifurcated, Seb, into a bicoastal elite, Seattle to San Diego, Miami to Boston, that has windows on this EU and these Asian dynamic economies. And if you had skills such as, you know, finance or media or academia or insurance or investment, you had a 7 billion person market and you were cosmopolitan, a good Greek word. But if you were in the interior, or even 50 miles, and you were muscular or farming or manufacturers, then you were written off as losers, red state America. And we're not citizens of the world. Why would we entrust this unique sovereignty, this exceptional nation, to countries that are made up of alliances or world bodies of governance that are made up of illiberal states? Why do you think that Secretary of State Blinken asked the UN to adjudicate whether we are racist or not, with members like China in that body that have 1.5 million people locked up, more or less, in these Uyghur labor camps? So very skeptical that global economics should translate into global governance.
I have just been scribbling down a long list of questions I have to ask you just based upon the last response you gave. Let me go to the first one. Given what you mentioned about Milley interposing himself illegally into the chain of command, giving China a heads up, Comey entrapping the national security advisor, Clapper lying about the surveillance of U.S. citizens, the abuse of the FISA court, the FBI forging a CIA document to illegally spy on Carter Page. Do you have any qualms, given all of these, which is a short list of the last 5 years, do you have any qualms in using the phrase deep state, that it actually exists?
No, I think it's either, I've heard all of these synonyms, they're all fine with me, they permanent state, de facto government, administrative state. It's sort of like what we saw in French history at the 5,000 people who camped out at Versailles, no matter who was king or what, no matter what the revolution, or the Escorial and outside Madrid during the Spanish Empire, or the Kremlin, let's be face it. And it went right from the Tsar right into the Bolsheviks. So we've got a permanent class of unelected people who started out as public servants. It was a noble idea, but they got so numerous, so well compensated, so pensioned, and so autonomous that they're like an amoeba, an organic growth that no one can handle. So, and I mean that literally, because...
Yeah. But carry on.
Well, I mean, think of Anthony Fauci. He's a nice enough person, but he has told us, basically, he believes in the Platonic noble lie that I had to lie about you, to you about mask. I lied to you about herd immunity, because if I didn't lie, you might, as stupid people, buy too many masks and shorten the supply, or you might not get vaccinated, oh, by the way, I didn't really give. I sort of maybe could have given some money through maybe Echo Health Alliance, and maybe it went to the Wuhan Virology Lab, and maybe it's controlled by the Chinese military, and maybe that virus may not be engineered. But I have nothing to do and I have nothing to say to you. Or I don't really think that I have to tell you that naturally acquired immunity is not, maybe could be significantly comparable or superior to vaccinate. And so it's gibberish, and then he's mad that people don't listen to him. And he's lost the public confidence, and the FBI Comey is mad at us. 245 times under oath he said, I didn't know, or I couldn't remember. The FBI director, the head of all of our investigatory authority at the FBI, can't remember.
Incredible.
Robert Mueller said, remember Robert Mueller, the two pillars of his investigation, the Steele dossier and Houston GPS, asked specifically to describe the role in his investigation. I don't know anything about that. That's what he said.
All right. I have so much more to ask, but I really see this as a service to our millions of listeners and all of our viewers. These are just some of the books in my library that I recommend to you from Professor Hansen. Why the West Has Won. The Western Way of War. The father of us all, war and history, a war like no other. Who Killed Homer? A fabulous read. Ripples of Battle, Makers of Ancient History. And more recently, The Second World Wars, The Case for Trump, and the latest that you must order right now. It's already a number one bestseller. Just released, The Dying Citizen. Get it today. How progressive elites, tribalism, and globalization are destroying the idea of America. We'll be back one-on-one with Professor Victor Davis Hansen after these messages. Gun Owners of America is the only no-compromise gun lobby. From battling the Biden administration's radical anti-gun agenda to restoring your constitutionally protected rights in the states, GOA's grassroots army, led by a friend of this show, Eric Pratt, is ready. GOA has a proud 45-year history of defending your Second Amendment rights without compromise. GOA's mission is simple: to protect, defend, and restore the Second Amendment. For just $25 a year, you can take an active role in the protection of your rights. When you join today by visiting gunowners.org/GORKA, you will receive a free gift. So help protect the Second Amendment by joining Gun Owners of America right now at gunowners.org/GORKA.
You're listening to America First with Dr. G.
We are one-on-one with Stanford University's Professor Victor Davis Hansen. Given that you have said all the synonyms, the deep state, the permanent bureaucracy, are justified, not hyperbole, we have the empirical evidence. If we add to that what we witnessed last year, 80 million unbidden mail-out ballots sent out, Democrat governors across the nation saying we don't need to verify signatures, we can stretch the dates, suitcases of ballots being pulled from under tables on CCTV. And Hunter Biden, the Hunter Biden story being literally censored at the source by Silicon Valley. The oldest newspaper in America, Alexander Hamilton's New York Post, not being allowed to repost the story of the contents of the Hunter Biden laptop. Is it, again, I'm using you as my sounding board. Is it hyperbole? Is it exaggeration to say that this quote-unquote regime, this White House, is illegitimate, Professor?
Oh, I'm not going to adjudicate, because that's what Hillary Clinton did and disparaged. remember, she said that he was not fairly elected.
Yes.
Stacey Abrams did that. All I will say is that when you transition in a single election cycle to from the highest you've ever had mail-in ballots in 2016 of 40% roughly, and you go to 63%, 102 mail-in or early ballots, and the error rate goes from a typical per state average of 3 to 4% rejection rate, and it goes down to 0.2 to 0.4, depending on the state. And then you're told that when you more than double the amount of work to tabulate those ballots, and you need double the amount of workers, yet you're going to find less error than you usually would when you have half the ballot. I just don't believe that's possible, because I think what had happened is what you said, that there was radical changes in the state legislature's domain of establishing state balloting laws in key states, Pennsylvania, for example, and others, in which, as you said, the dates when ballots were due were changed. You did not have to have your full name, last name, or first name could be dropped off in some cases. Sometimes ballots were not thrown out, often when they did not have an address or the improper address. And all of that occurred fueled by things like $500 million of Mark Zuckerberg Silicon Valley cash targeted to enhance, in a way that I think you could argue was illegal, to pick and choose which precincts you're going to pour private money in to enhance a particular type of agenda for a government poll worker or registrar or officer. So, yeah, I think there was a lot of really problematic questions. And the result is that Election Day, and I think I can say that without any hesitancy, the data shows that Election Day is a construct, that the majority of people did not vote on Election Day. And that would mean everything, Seb, that from that second debate, which was critical, there were about 50 million people that didn't, that might have been affected, but they had already voted.
Yeah.
So we're warping the traditional idea of Election Day, and we're doing it because the left feels that if they don't do that, they will not get the consensus they need because their agenda is not appealing to most people.
I expected a very judicious, conscientious response on my prompting you to try and adjudicate on the legitimacy of the current administration. But your answer is a very full and robust one. Let me ask you to adjudicate from the historian's perspective. Will you put the last 9 months of the Biden regime into modern presidential perspective? Many have compared him to Carter, but at least Carter had a full 4 years to get to the Iran hostage crisis, the malaise, the oil crisis. Should anybody who has a triple-digit IQ be surprised at the rapidity, the alacrity of the decline of America in less than 12 months?
Yes. Well, I finished the Dying Citizen right before he took office, and I predicted that it would be like this. And then I wrote an epilogue the first 2 months about what had happened in January and February. And so I wasn't surprised, because he was non compos mentis. Biden was not in control of his own destiny, and he was being manipulated or used. Not that he had a very stellar record as a senator or vice president. He did not. He had a bad habit of using racial epithets, racialist language, crazy opportunistic positions that would go back and forth. But nevertheless, he was an empty vessel that the AOC, Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren wing of that party, which were pretty much socialists, used to carry that agenda across the finish line, because it gave a veneer, they thought, of respectability. So I wasn't surprised that as soon as he was elected, then they took over, and they have been over. And they either want to change the demography or change the system of governance to advance an agenda that they, in their naivete, thought might work for their own benefit.
Do you miss President Trump? I know I do. And now I'm coming to you with a very special offer from my team that you do not want to miss from President Trump. Now is your chance to enter to win one of 6 signed photographs of the president, which were hand-signed by President Trump and soon could be hanging up in your house. When President Trump signed these photographs, he wanted to make sure all of his supporters had the chance to receive one. And now is your chance. All you have to do is text FHOTO, photo, to 55404 today for your chance to win a beautiful photograph of President Trump and First Lady Melania Trump, hand-signed by President Trump himself, by texting PHOTO to 55404 right now. You will get exclusive double entry activated by my team for a limited time. Again, text photo to 55404 to have your name entered twice to win a hand-signed Trump photograph. You don't want to miss this. Our contest ends soon. paid for by the National Republican Senatorial Committee.
I know Sebastian well. Listen to him. He's with us.
Welcome back to One on One with the author of Dying Citizen, Professor Victor Davis Hanson. How bad have the qualitative measures of our security degraded in just the last 9 months?
Well, I think that let's take the, our potential or likely our actual enemies. So China has now vastly increased the intrusions into Taiwanese yes. waters and airspace. And why have they done that? We don't have to speculate, Seb. They write it in their own public megaphones,
yeah.
their own documents. And they feel that Afghanistan showed the world that United States is not only an unreliable ally, but is a precipitously unreliable, that at any given moment, it can leave the biggest airbase in Central Asia or $1 billion rehabbed embassy or $80 billion in weapons. And if it can do that, it can just turn its back on Taiwan on a dime. And therefore, the Taiwanese, while they still have time, are supposed to cut a deal with the Chinese. And then the Australians and the Japanese and the South Koreans are saying to us, we rearmed. We took risk to challenge the Chinese because under President Trump, we were starting to have this broad coalition. What are we doing now? Are we going to be pruned like limbs that are exposed naked to the elements? Where is the United States? So, yeah, we're losing. North Korea suddenly comes out of the woodwork again and says, you know, I'm going to stand by a nuclear weapon, Kim Il-sung, and I'm going to declare that, you know, Japan, the United States, and Australia are menaces. And then Iran says, we're stepping up nuclear. So deterrence can be lost in a day, but its reacquisition and is very difficult. It requires, unfortunately, some material, concrete signal or exercise that show you that you're serious. And that's what's dangerous about throwing it away, because we don't want to get in a shooting war to prove that we are much stronger than the Chinese. We are. And every element of military and economic power, even at this degrading state, we're much more powerful. But why should we have to prove that? We have to prove that, unfortunately, maybe because we gave the wrong signals of being spiritually weak. And throughout history, when a strong power allows a weaker power or an ascendant to bully them, that power then says, ah, if I had that power, I would use it. But they are so weak and dubious of their own mission or their own values that with all those advantages, they still can be defeated because they lack deterrence based on willpower. So, and that's dangerous. And the left doesn't understand that their policies are very reckless and get people killed. And they will get people killed unless we restore deterrence. And so I'm very depressed about it. I'm very depressed about how willingly the Pentagon blamed everybody. They blamed each other. They blamed the administration. They blamed the State Department. And those people and those agencies blamed them. Not one general stood up and said, I was wrong. This project was going to collapse the way that we were approaching it in June and July and August. I'm sorry. I take full responsibility. We haven't heard any of that.
Yeah.
Instead, we're searching out mythical white supremacists. That's what we're doing in the military.
The phrase you use, spiritual weakness, is a very powerful one, and I think it's provocative. Where, you know, dictators, oligarchs, when they see spiritual weakness, they see opportunity, whether it's North Korea, whether it's Russia, or whether it's China. Let's talk about. So here's the question you raise when it comes to the domestic elite having betrayed the working man, having betrayed the middle class on both sides of the aisle. And they did so over the last 50, 60 years. This is, you know, J.D. Vance's Hillbilly Elegy. This is The Forgotten Man. They did this in collusion with or collaboration with the globalists or the globalist agenda. Can we spend a moment on that? Because, you know, the left always says, oh, this is a dog whistle like Cosmopolitan when you say globalists. But it really is a value system. When you say in league with the global agenda, who is that referring to, Professor Hansen?
Well, I try to be literal and not just talk in vagaries, but we have this Davos crowd. And that's too general in itself. So Klaus Schwab, the architect of Davos, is now on a project that he has entitled The Great Reset. And he's written a book called The Great Reset in COVID-19. And his argument is that in this period of global crises, it's an opportunity to tell the world that you're on the wrong trajectory. And we've already seen some of their elements enacted. They've had a global consensus to charge a particular rate for corporate taxes. So a country like Ireland that wants investment will not be allowed to do that. And these are rules that they envision that will transcend national sovereignty. And what are they? They're things like reduction in the use of petroleum or natural gas and emphasis on solar power, even though we know that that will reduce, at least in the short term, the standard of living. It's diversity in the corporate boardroom, equity. And so we're going to do this on a national scale, and it's going to have credibility because of plurality. In other words, the more nations that are involved somehow translates into a superior moral stance over the Congress of the United States, even though, as I said earlier, half the countries in the world are not consensual societies. And I think even the half that claim they are, about half of them are not. And so where this leads to is the International Criminal Court saying that we're going to file a suit against an American soldier for violation of what we call the rules of war. Or Anthony Blinken said, you know, I don't trust our own adjudicator, so I'm having the UN come in and see whether we're acting in a racist fashion against our own people. Or the World Health Organization should supplant our own health agencies because they have more influence given Chinese money, even though they've said things that are completely bankrupt and with no credibility. But you can't be a constitutional republic and surrender your sovereignty or your choices or your options to a transnational group that has no credibility. I mean, we learned that, I thought, with the League of Nations.
Yeah.
And it's always, as I say in the book, it was the word cosmopolitan is translates as globalist. It comes from the Greek citizen of the world.
Yeah.
And people talked about in the ancient world. Alexander the Great said, I'm going to bring a brotherhood of man, unite all the people under my benighted leadership. Napoleon said, I'm going to make a beautiful continental system and get rid of... Hitler said the same thing. The Comintern said the same thing. But it doesn't have a very illustrious history when we talk about global governance or surrendering American unique exceptional constitutionalism to, I don't know what you'd call the global norm these days.
Yeah, I think latent dictatorial tendencies is how I label it. The book is The Dying Citizen. Just out. Order it now. It's already number one. That great American patriot, Mike Lindell, the inventor and CEO of MyPillow, wants to give back to you, my listeners. You can get great discounts on all of his MyPillow products right now if you go to MyPillow.com and click on the Radio Listener Special. Get deep discounts on MyPillow's mattress toppers, towels, and so much more, including the amazing sheepskin line slippers with the MyPillow foam. Mike is offering a buy one, get one free offer on his Giza Dream Sheets of finest Egyptian cotton. All MyPillow products come with a 60 day money-back guarantee and a 10-year warranty. Go to MyPillow.com and click on the Radio Listener Specials for the buy one, get one free offer on the Giza Dream Sheets. Enter promo code G-O-R-K-A or call 1-800-829-8468. That's 1-800-829-8468, promo code G-O-R-K-A.
The deepest voice in talk radio, Dr. Sebastian Gorka.
Welcome back to America First with Professor Victor Davis Hanson. for those who are most concerned about the future of the Republic, what should they read now? In addition to de Tocqueville, what are the two things that will help us understand what we have lost and what we must regain?
I think I would start with Aristotle's Politics. It's essential. I like Alex de Tocqueville's Democracy in America, but there's also a forgotten work, and that's John de Crèvecoeur, Farming in America. And he has two essays about the homestead farmer and the people who created the revolution, Crèvecoeur.
Yes.
And I would look, Letters from an American Farmer. It's an absolute classic work, and it's not appreciated. And I really recommend that highly. And then I try to, I don't want to get back into military things, but I try to read memoirs of people. Mm-hmm. And the two pillars for me, because they talk about the American system that powered the Union Army, and that's Ulysses S. Grant, his memoirs of the Civil War, and the twin of William Tecumseh Sherman, not as highly regarded, but in my view, much better even than Grant, although Grant's much better written. And what they both are saying is, we are going to defeat the Confederacy because, and they go about they talk about their constitutional system, and the Union has more reified the promise of all men are created equal in the Declaration. And they talk about apostasy and breaking the rules of constitutional government. So they're political scientists, and then they're strategists in the sense, especially Sherman, they're saying war is cultural, it's spiritual, it's economic. I'm not going to go down there like Grant is doing and fight Bobby Lee head on and kill a bunch of people who don't own slaves on the Confederates. I'm going to go down and humiliate the Confederate plantation slave-owning class and then sort of cut the octopus's head off and then save lives by not having pitched battles. So it was a very different idea. It was sort of the indirect approach, which later was popularized by Liddell Hart and others. But it's a classic work, not just of military strategy, but of Americanism by Sherman.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, you have your marching orders. Grant, Sherman, de Crèvecoeur, Aristotle's Politics, but most important, start with Victor Davis Hanson's latest, The Dying Citizen. Follow him at VD Hanson on Twitter and also at victorhanson.com. God bless you, sir. I want to say thank you on behalf of all of our listeners for doing what you do, and most importantly, speaking truth at a time where it takes courage to do so. Thank you, and please keep doing what you do. I'm Sebastian Gorka. You've been listening to One on One. Keep your head on a swivel, watch your six, hold the line, and never give up, never give in, and stay frosty.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.